Create Art Podcast, KDOI Rebroadcast, Publishing and Creativity with Dawn Brotherton. Hello, friends. This is Timothy Kimo Bryan, your head instigator for Create Art Podcast, where I bring my 20 plus years of experience in the arts and education world to help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. This will be a special rebroadcast of an interview that I had with Dawn Brotherton on my old podcast. And there's going to be a lot of great information in here for you on that. But before we get started, I just wanted to mention something. I wanted to take a moment to address the June 24th Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. This decision stripped away the legal right to have a safe and legal abortion, restricting access to comprehensive reproductive care, including abortion, threatens the health and independence of all Americans. This decision could lead to the loss of other rights. To learn more about what you can do to help, go to podvoices.help. I encourage you to speak up, take care, and spread the word. Now, with this episode, like I said, we're going to be talking about publishing. We're going to be talking about hybrid publishing, self-publishing, and traditional publishing. And it was a great conversation that we had. I learned a ton from it. And I got introduced to Dawn by my good friend Chris Jones from the Art and Business of Writing podcast. So without further ado, let's go ahead and take a listen to the conversation. All right. Thank you all for tuning in to KDOI Podcasting. Again, I'm your host, Timothy Kimo Bryan, and we're bringing you more conversations on art. And we're creating more than we consume, definitely in this season. Today, I have the proud privilege of talking with Dawn Brotherton. Now, Dawn is out in the Williamsburg area. She's an author. She's a public speaker. She runs her own publishing company, and she's the president of the Williamsburg Book Festival. Folks, she's going to be talking a lot about creativity, about book, about publishing, about everything around that. So it's my proud privilege to bring her onto the show this fine day. Dawn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Well, it's a beautiful day out here in Fredericksburg. So we're not neighbors, but we're close enough in the wonderful Commonwealth of Virginia.
Yes, it's been sticky here today.
Yeah, we've had that weather here too. So hopefully the fall comes on us pretty soon, and we can get into book festival season and all that good stuff. I brought you on here today because we have a good friend, Chris, that introduced us online, and I actually met him through a book festival here in Fredericksburg that he helps run. But I was really interested in talking with you because, well, first and foremost, you have 9 books that you have currently out right now. Is that correct?
So far.
Okay. And folks, that's important. So far.
I have a couple more.
So far. That is, so. And I think every good writer should have a couple in the background there. I know for myself, I've got 5 books out, 4 books of poetry, 1 book of a short story for my daughters. And then there's always more to dig in from that. Well, Dawn, can you tell me a little bit about your, about the books that you have out right now?
Well, it all kind of starts with my background. I was in the Air Force for 28 years. I was one of the first female missile launch officers. And during my first duty assignment, I had a stalker. I had somebody breaking into my house, messing with my phones. It was really creepy. But of course, my friends would say, "That's such a good story. You need to write that down." As friends do, you know. And I did eventually write it down. It wasn't quite creepy enough, so I had to kill off a few people. And I turned that into my first book, The Obsession. So that's where it all started. And then I thought, well, I'm done. I wrote my story. What else is there to write? You were talking about creativity. Where do you get your ideas? Most people start with what they know. So I thought I was done. Then One day I got mad at my husband, so I killed him in the second book. Nice. Don't tell him, because I don't think he's read it yet.
No.
So in the second book, Mind the Clock, Jackie Austin, who's the main character, goes off to Germany. She's working for the Inspector General's office. And while she's there, there's a plane crash. It looks very similar to a scenario she wrote for an exercise. So she gets blamed for it. And she has to figure out who did it to get OSI off her back. And actually the opening.
OSI.
Yeah, like NCIS.
I was just remembering. Just like NCIS, but Air Force, because I remember when I was in, because that's something that we also share, is I'm an Air Force vet too. I remember OSI being this shadowy outfit that, you know, you didn't want to say anything bad, otherwise the OSI boogeyman would get you.
Yes, I've tried to avoid those boogeymen. So then I switched up a little bit, because as I was doing my research, I learned that romance books sell really well. So I thought, okay, I'll try it. I didn't read romance growing up. That wasn't my genre, but I'll give it a shot. And it did really well. And it actually won a bronze award through a company online. And then I didn't know what to do with it, though, because I didn't write it under my own name. I was still active duty Air Force. I didn't want anybody working for me reading any love scenes that I might have written. So that kind of just died right there, because I didn't know what to do with it. I've learned a lot over the years. I am actually getting ready to re-release that under my own name. So that should be coming out again in the next couple months, probably. But in the meantime, because yes, I'm all over the place with my interests, I grew up playing fast pitch softball. I started when I was 9 years old. I coached, I umpired, I kept score, and I've got two daughters that are 17 and 19, and they both played fast pitch softball, and we helped coach their teams. And from that came the Lady Tigers. The Lady Tigers is about second through sixth grade reading level. It's a chapter book with a few pictures. And the Lady Tigers is about a girls fast pitch softball team, where the girls learn that being part of a team is more than what happens on the field. Each book has its own little story behind it, and there's discussion questions in the back so the kids can talk amongst themselves or to the parents, and there's a glossary. So did you ever read Matt Christopher growing up?
I can't say that I did, no. No.
Matt Christopher was one of my favorites, and it was about that same reading level. I read everything I could get my hands on. They were about every sport you could think of, but all for boys. So I decided I wanted something for girls. Not to say the boys can't read it, but I wanted girls to be the protagonists. The really cool thing about that series, there's five in the series right now. The fourth one was actually written by my daughter, Paige.
Oh, yes. Nice.
So she wrote Avery Appreciates True Friendship, and it has to do with self-esteem and appreciating who you are and who your friends are, even though you're different. So that was pretty exciting.
That is awesome. I mean, actually bringing your family into the whole writing realm. Can you talk about that for a moment for us? Because I've got two daughters myself. They're both five. And I'm not saying which one's the oldest. I've kept that secret for 5 years, and I think I remember. But how is that process for you? I mean, myself, I can't bring in my daughters to write yet. They will be getting your books for Christmas in 2 years. When they hit second grade. But can you talk about that process, about bringing them, bringing in a family member like that and kind of sharing the spotlight with them?
Oh, actually, this is a very fun story that I'd love to share. When the Lady Tigers first came about, it was actually Rachel, my older daughter, who's 19 and a math nerd. She's just a math brain. But she came to me, which she was probably 13, and she's like, Mom, I've got this idea. She gives me a chapter of a book, and I start reading it, and I was so impressed. I'm like, oh my gosh, Rachel. It started right in the middle of a scene where, in the middle of a game, where the girl hits the ball. She runs first, runs the second, slides into third, stands up. Her coach is smiling, and the crowd is going wild, but she can't hear them because she's deaf. And I'm like, Oh my gosh, that is so good. Rachel, we could do this together. We can have a whole series. And we planned out 10 books and we had a theme for each one. And then she went into high school and wasn't interested in playing with me anymore. So you have that to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. But, oh, I can't wait.
But then Paige came along with her interest in writing. And she is more of the art side. She sings and writes songs and journals all the time. So that's her side of the brain. And she started helping by proofing some of my books. And she rewrote the backs of my books. And if you go out to my website, I have a special section. It's called Meet the Lady Tigers. And there's softball cards out there for each one of the girls that give a little background story for each one. Like if they have a brother, sister, what's their favorite ice cream, all that. Paige wrote all of that for all 13 characters.
Oh, wow.
So that was so fun. So when she saw my list of topics that I was going to write about and she saw the self-esteem one, she said, I want to be the one to write this. She felt she was closer to it than her mother. I'm a little too old. You know how that goes. So I did not edit her book. I did not give her any input to her book. Totally hers. I sent it off to another editor and we had some beta readers and all that, but she dealt with it. And she was 15 when the book came out. She got to go down to the American Library Association conference last year in New Orleans, and she signed books down there. And she was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And she's just doing fantastic. She's working on a totally different series on her own now.
Oh, excellent. And it's that parental pride that you have, that you're seeing them, you know, kind of take up the mantle and it does your heart good. Absolutely. I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Now, you know what? I don't want to be remiss in this. Website for you, so that way everyone can go and grab a copy of these books, because folks, seriously, I'm getting all the kids books here when my girls are, you know, of the proper age, because right now they're not there yet. But your website is dawnbrothertonauthor.com, is that correct? Okay, good deal. Folks, go out there, check out all the books, buy all the copies you can get.
Give them as Christmas presents. They're great Christmas presents, and Easter and Halloween, any
holiday whatsoever.
Kids always got books in their Easter basket. We didn't do candy. We did books and puzzles.
You got kids. You got somebody that's hard to buy for. Buy them a book. Absolutely. Now back to the podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. So where were we? I still have two more to tell you about.
You still have, but wait, there's more.
I mentioned that I coached and umpired and all that, and I kept score for softball. Mm-hmm. My daughters were playing, my husband and I, of course they were on two separate teams because that's how things mm-hmm. go. So you have to split on the weekends, and we would mm-hmm. both end up keeping score. But the books that they give you are so tiny, the little squares, and there's no places to write notes. And trust me, when they're little and they're playing ball, it's where do you mm-hmm. write? Well, she kicked the ball and it hit the second baseman who ran into the runner. I mean, there's no place to put that. So I actually created my own softball score sheet, and it's a bigger book. It's an 11x14, and it actually has space for notes, and it has directions in the back how to keep score.
Oh, nice.
That doesn't sound like it should be all that important, but for coaches who have a tendency to, they just hand a book to a parent and say, here, keep score. And they walk away and the parent's going, what? This will actually explain to them how to do it.
Well, and I would think that, you know, you'd want to keep score correctly, you know, just, you know, for that final outcome, but, you know, for, you know, statistics to help a child go, okay, well, you know, your batting average was this, this is what you did this time. And as a coach, you know, that way you can have those as training moments or teaching moments for your team. I would think. I've never been a baseball coach, but I grew up in Chicago and saw a lot of baseball there. And I always knew to, you know, keep a scorecard handy so that way I could remember what happened during that
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. And a good scorekeeper, the coach can look at the book and repeat the whole game, explain what happened. So, but my most recent book is called The Road to Publishing. It talks about the various options that you have these days, because, you know, the way it used to be is you had to get an agent, go to New York City, and very few people could actually do that. Well, in the digital age and with everything being on the internet, it's opened up the world to a lot more authors that never would have had the chance before. The road to publishing helps people think through that process, and I discuss in detail self-publishing, traditional publishing, the New York City route, or hybrid publishing, which is partway in between. It's like outsourcing the things you don't want to do. And the book helps you think through what kind of information do you need, what kind of questions do you need to ask, and what do you need to consider to make the right decision for you.
And, you know, that's a good lead in to your Blue Dragon Publishing. One thing that when I was looking through that the description he had in the book and Blue Dragon Publishing is the whole hybrid model. Myself, I did Vanity Press. I did Lulu.com, and I did the Amazon one, CreateSpace, which was fine for me. But then I put out the book. It's on my shelf. It's fantastic, whatever. It's a good ego pump for me. But then the whole idea of doing all the marketing, of all the pushing, of, you know, the editing and all that kind of jazz, that's where I stopped at. And I was like, man, I don't have time. I've got twin girls. I've got a full-time job. I've got a 45-minute commute each way. I don't have time to do all that kind of stuff. And then when you brought up hybrid publishing, can you talk a little bit more on that, and especially what you do with Blue Dragon Publishing?
Sure.
Because I find it very fantastic.
I wish I would have found a hybrid publisher when I first started. So
they didn't have that when we were kids, when we did our first books, you know,
when it was first coming out. So the idea behind a hybrid publisher, like I said, it's think of it as outsourcing. Most writers, first of all, if you know nothing, most writers think, oh, well, I just write a book and everybody's going to think it's wonderful and I'm going to be rich because that's how it works. But it's only like 5% maybe of authors actually make a living as an author. It's amazing how many people have a side job or a main job with writing on the side. So the goodness of using a hybrid publisher, and trust me, there are a lot of them out there nowadays. So you can shop around. One of the best things is if you talk to one and you don't really like what they have to say, go find another one because you have options. So you get to learn. You get to take advantage of all the lessons that they have already learned. Like I have shopped around for many different printers and I've picked the ones that I like best for certain books, but I've learned, well, if I want to do Spiral, I need to go here. But if I want to do over 300 pages, here's the best one, where you would have to go and research all of that on your own. And usually because I have so many books, anything that I do, I experiment with myself first. And that goes for publicity, nice, marketing, anything like that, because I don't want to spend other people's money poorly. I want to give them the best experience possible. You talked about marketing. Straight up, that's the biggest problem for everybody. And even traditional publishers in New York City, they only spend marketing money on about 40% of their people nowadays. They've cut the marketing budget huge. Mm-hmm. They expect every author to sell their own book. That's a big wake up for some people because they don't understand that. As a hybrid, part of what I do for marketing, you know, I have my list of things. I'll say, this is what I'll do for you, but you have to at least do these things. And part of it has to do is what their goal is when they're starting. If that's the first thing I always start with is what's your goal? Because if you want to be rich and famous, you probably need to pitch to a New York City publisher. But if you're trying to give talks and you need a book in the back of the room, you know, to sell after you're done, or as a marketing tool to pass out after you give a pitch, hybrid is the way to go because it's professional. Mm-hmm. You don't have to hassle with all the finding the editor, finding the cover artist, who's going to be your graphic designer, all those little details. What paperweight do you use? I mean, all the little things you don't realize. But you'll get your money back very quickly when you have your own set audience.
That's true. That's true. It kind of reminds me, I don't know if you're familiar with him, Seth Godin. He has a whole thing on marketing about marketing to the smallest sustainable audience. And if you can get, you know, 150 readers or followers that are rabid about your stuff, that will just eat up anything that you put out, that's fantastic, versus having, you know, 1,000 followers on Facebook that hit like but don't buy your book. You know, you can have 1,000 followers that don't buy a book, or you can have 150 followers that buy everything that you put out and pay you money and do a Patreon account or what have you. And you really got to work at that. But I the thing that when I was going through the Blue Dragon website is you don't publish everything that goes across your desk. You know, you all are selective, because it's not only the author's name on there, it's your name too. And that really caught my eye on that. And I applaud you for that, because it looks to me like you're setting a certain standard that you want to have, that the author is going to, you know, they're going to make their money off of it if they put in the work, but you're willing to put in the work and put your name on it too.
Right. And that's what makes the difference between a hybrid and a vanity press. Because the vanity mm-hmm. press will basically print anything that's given to them. Although I'm sure your book was fantastic, but a vanity press will print anything.
Absolutely. Well, they didn't give me the choice of, you know, paperweight. They didn't, you know, I had to set up all the typesetting. I had to do the PDF. I had to do the graphic design for it and everything like that. My goal with it was, hey, I'm just going to get this out, put it on my shelf, hand it out to all my friends and family, and that was kind of my goal with it. I didn't become a millionaire, you know, yet, you know, if I put O in front of my last name, Timothy O'Brien, then I'll be a famous author. But I like my name the way it is. But now I like what you're saying about what is your goal, you know, as an artist in, you know, in writing, in cooking, tattooing, you know, everything, every subject that we cover here on KDOI podcasting, what, you know, knowing what that goal is for you, that first book, getting back to your books, for that first book that you put out, what was that goal for you?
Well, again, it was just getting the story down, because my friends thought that this would be great. And I thought, okay, yeah, I've always loved to read. That's a lot of writers are like that. And I just wanted it out there. Well, once I finished it, I went, okay, now what? And then I started looking into what my options were. And hybrid was not a thing. Print on demand was not a thing. So I'm like, crap. What am I going to do now? So I started doing all this research, and I'm like, okay, well, I've got to pay for editing, and I have to pay for this, and I have to pay for this and this. And wait a minute. And the publisher is going to take 90% of the profit? Oh, forget this. I'm a colonel. I can do this myself. So I just, I just set up my own company. And when I initially started Blue Dragon, I was just doing it for me. And real quick, let me back up. The difference between self-publishing and setting up your own company, it sounds like it's splitting hairs. But actually, with setting up Blue Dragon, I outsource the editing and some of the other stuff. So I wasn't doing it myself. I was paying somebody else to do it as subcontractors. But I set up Blue Dragon thinking I'm just going to do this for me. And then friends started coming to me, and then people that I didn't even know started coming to me and saying, hey, so-and-so said you could help me with this. And I was like, okay, sure. Why not? And Blue Dragon just started coming about until 2016, when I actually retired from the Air Force. And then I went full-time and increased the marketing and increased the services that I offered and really started stepping it up. And now I have over 26 authors at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's growing all the time. So I have a couple more in the works. We'll see what happens.
Now, my day job is I help soldiers transition out of the Army, and some of them, they're tired of having someone tell them what to do, what uniform to wear every day, where to eat, what to think, and all that kind of stuff. For you, doing that transition from you know, being a colonel, because colonels have a lot of weight. Colonels tell a lot of people what to do. And of course, colonels get told what to do from some generals. But how is that to, you know, move from that lifestyle to moving into, you know, going full time, full bore into the publishing world for yourself, going into business for yourself like that?
The transition was interesting because my last assignment was at the Pentagon. Ooh, so nice. Colonels at the Pentagon make coffee. So I did have a lot of generals telling me what to do at that point. For me, at first, the thought was this is going to be great because I have very long hair and I had to put up my hair every single day pretty much for 28 years. So I was looking forward to not having to get up, do my hair, and put on a uniform and just work in my pink fuzzy slippers. That was my goal. And that only worked for a little while until I really started getting into it and started talking to people and getting out and visiting and networking and attending meetings and being part of boards and invited to speak. And now I teach at William & Mary with the Osher Lifelong Learning Center. I teach publishing there. So quickly I ended up adding more and more things to my list. So I am getting out and still talking to people. I have a lot of subcontractors, but subcontractors are not the same as employees that you can tell what to do exactly. And you're right, with the Air Force, I was used to being able to just, if I tell you to do this, it's going to happen and I don't have to worry about it. Whereas in the civilian world, you do have to worry about it and you constantly have to follow up and check deadlines. And so that was a big change.
Civilians are notorious for that, especially government civilians, which I am one of.
And the younger generation too. It's a big adjustment.
And it's, you know, what I tell my soldiers is when they're wanting to start up their own business, I tell them, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 thing. You know, you're not putting in 40 hours a week. If you're putting in 40 hours a week, you're on vacation. You know, you're usually to do your own business and to really delve into it, you're doing 50, 60, 70 hours a week sometimes. But this, you know, if it's a passion for you, the old adage that you'll never work a day in your life if it's something that's passionate. But in reality, I'm sure you can attest to this. There is some long hours, some frustrating times dealing with contractors versus dealing with airmen can be interesting. I'm sure.
And you're right. The workaholic part of me kicks in. And if I'm working from home, I can work all the time, which is not the right way to go about it. You really need to set hours and say, okay, I will work from 9 until 5:30. I've been working until my daughter gets home from rowing practice. And then I'm done for the day. And I have to leave my office and go physically to another room so that I don't get back on the computer again. The hard part is I almost have two parts of my brain happening because I've got Blue Dragon Publishing, but I need to keep Dawn the Author going as well and trying to find time to write and keep working everybody else's books.
Absolutely. And you're working, you know, the right and the left side, you know, you're getting your right side creativity going on. And then the left side, which is the, you know, the logistics planning behind everything, the marketing, you know, the promotion that you're doing, and grabbing new authors in all the time. You know, you're really working both sides of that brain. So I can imagine at the end of the day, you are done. You are absolutely done.
Absolutely.
But it's a work of love, I'm sure.
It is. I like helping other people. And I, you know, my tagline is helping a writer's dream become a reality. And I really mean that. I want to see people succeed. And I give them tips and I take them along on book signings and I prompt them and teach them how to give their 2-second elevator speech, 2-minute elevator speech, and get them comfortable in front of people. So it's practice.
Absolutely. It's like any muscle that we have out there. It's like writing. You're not going to write the New York Times bestseller the first time out there. If you do, hey, fantastic. Go for it. But the first time out, you're probably not going to do it. I know I didn't.
So many people do not understand that. they really don't understand that you really should edit your book 10 times minimum. And that's before you send it out for beta readers and all that.
10 times. I wish I would have done that for all four of my books, because I still get, I still see typos, especially in the earlier works. In the first three, I still see typos in there. My last one, not so much, but, and it gets me every time. But the beauty of how I do it is I can shut it down and then resubmit and redo it that way. But that's more of, I'm putting my toe in the water. I'm not fully, for myself right now, I'm not ready to, I know myself, I'm not ready to commit to the hybrid format yet. Some of the audience members that I do have may be at that point, and I'm definitely going to direct them right on over to you, Dawn, because I like the whole methodology that you have there, the whole mindset that you have over there. And I like the fact that it's not like a vanity press where it's everybody la-di-da-di. You're selective because it's your name on that book too. And that I see on your website, you know, the author has skin in the game. You've got skin in the game too. And you're providing a lot of expertise and a lot of knowledge that took you many years to gain. And I think that's a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Thank you.
Moving on from that. So we write our books, we get a good publishing, you know, plan going on for ourselves. I think one of the things that I found really good for me as a writer is actually doing a book festival. And you happen to do the Williamsburg Book Festival. Can you tell me how you got involved in that and what somebody can expect as a new writer at a book festival and what they should be doing?
Greg Lilly is a publisher of Cherokee McGee Publishing, and he started the Williamsburg Book Festival about 5 years ago. Then 2 years later, he brought me on as just one of the board members. And then he promptly moved, which left it with me. So I kind of inherited it. But Greg mm-hmm. had built a good platform for us, a good basis. And it's been growing every year, and we're trying new things. And we actually brought Chris Jones on as one of our board members, who also works with Fredericksburg. Mm-hmm. I will also be in Fredericksburg Book Festival, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah. So it is the first weekend in October always. So this time it's Saturday, the 5th of October. It's the same time as the Occasion for the Arts, which is a huge juried art festival that shuts down the streets around Colonial Williamsburg. And they have tents everywhere, and it's, you know, thousands of people will be there. They're there for 2 days. We're only going to be there on Saturday, and we're going to be in the Stryker building. People will come see us to get air conditioning. But we
that's a smart move, though. When you're in the fall in Virginia, I'm from Chicago. Summer, you would think, is done in October. Oh, no. I've seen 90 degree days all the way up in November in this Absolutely. Commonwealth.
And we don't get canceled for rain. So,
and Air Force motto is we don't invade unless they have air conditioning and cable TV.
And I don't see a problem with that. So, works for me. So this year we're going to have about 35 or 36 authors. We actually cut down the number of authors from last year. It's that demand.
No, kind of a supply and demand kind of thing that you want to have a little bit of scarcity for it. You want to make it special, you know, make it not just everybody la-di-da-di, but hey, these select 35 made
exactly
the cut.
And we do jury the books. We go through them. We make sure that they look professional and that we have a range, you know, that we have some children's mm-hmm. books, some mysteries, some poetry, and we have like, and then the other cool thing we do is we have classes going on throughout the day that are free that anybody can attend. They're different panels. Like we'll have the poet laureates. We have a panel of women authors, different genres, but they can kind of talk through some of their processes. And if you want to know the whole list, you can check it out at WilliamsburgBookFestival.com. And that'll have the schedule of everything that's going on that day. You asked about what authors can expect. Here's my take on book mm-hmm. festivals as an author. They are a great place to go meet people, meet other authors, and swap ideas. And I've made some really good friends from the very first book festival I attended. There's good and bad in it. There's good because, you know, if people are coming, they're there to buy books. They must be readers or mm-hmm. they wouldn't be there. But you're there with all your competition. So yeah. That is kind of tough. It's good to mix up your options. Do a few book festivals, but then also try to think outside the box. Where else can you sell books? What are you talking about? For example, my Lady Tiger series, I go to softball tournaments and I have a tent set mm-hmm. up at the softball tournament. People are there all day. They're in between games. They're bored. Why not buy a book? You know, so try to think mm-hmm. outside the box when you're selling your books.
We just recently had, and I think it's spreading around the country too. We had a how-to festival at our local library. And I did a 30-minute piece on how to do your own podcast. Now, obviously, I could talk for hours and hours on how to do your own podcast. But, you know, we had a couple of people in there talking about how to publish your own book. I didn't, unfortunately, they were doing it at the same time I was doing my presentation in a different room, but, I talked to them afterwards and they were kind of describing how to do, you know, set up your own vanity, stuff on CreateSpace and all that kind of jazz. But, still they, you know, that was a way for them to, you know, get into an audience that, hey, at a library, that you're obviously going to deal with readers right there. And, they were able to present their book. We weren't able to sell or push our businesses, but we were able to, you know, have our stuff out there. And if somebody picked it up, hey, there you go. Toss me a couple of bucks. But that's, you know, it's a little bit out of the box that most people wouldn't think to do, but you know, you can always go ask your library if you can do that.
Absolutely. And sometimes libraries will want you to, or they'll encourage you to make a donation of your book, but then they'll put it in the newspaper that you donated this book and it'll be picture. So there's free publicity for you.
When I did the book festival up here in Fredericksburg, I was doing two things at the same time, which is a huge mistake. I was launching a podcast, relaunching this podcast 3 years ago. And I had just popped out a book that I had just published at the same time. Don't recommend doing two things at once like that, folks. But as far as making those networking events, realistically, is somebody going to make it, you know, a $10,000 day in that? Or, you know, financially, what should you expect to invest in? What should you expect on your return on investment, would you say? I know I'm getting kind of businessy here. Right. But
to go to a book festival, again, it's supply and demand. So how many books do you have out? I've got 9 on my table. Chances are if you come to my table, you're going to find something that you want to read or you want to get for somebody else. So I'm going to do much better at a book festival than a person that only has one book. I mean, that's kind of, it sounds really simple, but that's the basics. They say that if you do a book signing and sell 4 books, you should consider that a success. That mm-hmm. sounds really painful. And it is painful to sit there for hours and sell 4 books. But what you have to remember is there's also the lag sales. People have to see your name a number of times before they start to recognize it and look for you. And you don't know how many people are going to pick it up on Kindle, for example, afterwards. I've had a lot of people that'll take my bookmark and then I'll see a bump in my sales on Kindle after I've done a presentation or after I've been at a farmer's market or something like that. So it's more than just what's happening that day. You have to look at the long term. I am thrilled to death when I go to different events now and somebody will say, I've heard of Blue Dragon. Where have I heard of that before? Well, it tells me I'm doing something right if my name is getting out mm-hmm. there.
And, you know, thinking outside the box, call up the local newspaper. You know, they newspapers, news outlets, they're always starved for good information about local stories. I mean, they the national stories and the regional stories are easy to knock out, easy peasy. But, you know, when somebody knows you locally, and I just actually, funny stories, I had this happen to me this weekend. I took my girls out to a farmer's market. One of the folks that was at the library said, "Hey, you're the podcast guy." And I'm like, that works. I can go with that. Yes, I am the podcast guy. Forgot his name, but, you know, we shook hands. We talked for a minute. My kids were playing with him. He was great. Sure enough, he's on, you know, I know he's downloading my podcast while I'm doing that. And, you know, on my podcast, he can hear, hey, Tim has this book out. Tim has that book out. You know, I'm sure that I'll have, like you said, lag sales that happen with that. So by all means, you know, everyone that's listening out here, and yeah, this isn't just for writers. This is for every, you know, this is for all the practices, all the arts. You know, get out there. As I tell my soldiers that are looking for jobs, and I tell other artists, go out there, shake hands, kiss babies. Because if you don't believe in yourself enough to put it out in the world, then nobody else is going to, you know, find you magically. You need to actually be out there and doing some work for it. And that's my soapbox. I'm sorry. I'm going to get off my soapbox.
Well, I've got another soapbox for you. The other thing that I would always encourage is if for readers that are going to book festivals or that are seen walking by somebody signing books at a bookstore, anytime you have a chance to buy directly from the author, please do. Because if people, like I said, they take my card and they say, "Oh, are you on Amazon?" I want to roll my eyes. It's not the right response, but yes, mm-hmm. I am on Amazon. But of course, if you buy through Amazon, Amazon is getting a chunk of the money that if you bought right now, I could put it back into my next book. So if you're going mm-hmm. to support the author, it would be wonderful if you would make a direct face-to-face sale. And that goes with anything, books, music, mm-hmm. art, anything like that. If you can cut out the middleman, it's supporting the author, the artist more.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know the cut with Amazon is just, it's a pain. And you know, sometimes you can cut a deal or whatnot. The thing of it is that on Amazon, when you order that book, you can't get the author to sign it right then and there.
That's right.
That's never going to happen. I remember I was at a Saul Williams. He's a slam poet. I saw him in Rockford, Illinois after a show, brought my book to him, had him sign it. He put a little inscription in it. And, you know, that book is on my shelf. It's like it's got a shrine to it and all that kind of jazz. And he just wrote a couple of words in there, and that means something to me as a fan, because then I'm going to go buy all the rest of his books when you make that personal contact with your audience out there. And it, you know, for me, it feels good. Dawn, how about you when you meet people that are, you know, they've got your book and they're having you sign in at a book festival? How does that feel for you?
At first, it was so awkward. I wasn't sure what to do, but I love it. It is so nice. One of my favorite things, I said I go to the softball tournaments, and they're usually 2 days, Saturday, Sunday. Saturday, these little kids come by and they buy one of my books. And then the next day they're back and they're all excited. They're like, "I'm already on chapter 4, you know, and they're just so happy. And nice. That just makes me feel awesome. And with the Jackie Austin mysteries, I have quite a few fans that are really bugging me to get that third book out. In my spare time, I'm working on it.
The third
one is called Truth Has No Agenda, and it is taking place at the Pentagon. Go figure. Jackie kind of followed me through all my assignments. So,
well, like I said, write what you know. Exactly. Absolutely. That's the easiest way to do it. And it's an old cliche. It's the first thing you learn in writing, but write what you know. Write what's in front of you there. And we actually had an episode on inspiration and creativity, and it was all about, you know, if you just sit quietly enough, something will pop up in front of you that's worth writing down, painting, cooking, putting on a tattoo, stuff like that. That stuff will come into you and it will present itself.
Great. Well, here's something for inspiration. I absolutely love fantasy. That is dragons, obviously. That's my favorite thing to read. I have never been able to write it because every time I try to think of something, I'm like, oh no, it's already been done. No, Anne McCaffrey already had something like that. You know, I can't get past that block. For my birthday this year, Paige, my younger daughter, wrote me this poem called The Silent Mountain. And it is just beautiful. She's such a good writer. She's better than I am. But it's called The Silent Mountain. And then she wrote me three opening scenarios to get my book started. And that has been the greatest present. So I'm excited. I've started thinking about it. I'm like, oh, and I know what I can do. And I know how it's going to end, but I'm not sure about this part. So she's already got me thinking. So that's some inspiration for you.
Go have some kids. They will provide inspiration. They'll provide stories for you. Oh my God. I mean, I'm a father of twins and you have two daughters. Just the stories that we could have, you know, from our kids we could fill up libraries upon libraries, I'm sure.
Comic relief, if nothing else.
All right. So we've gone over your books. We have gone over Blue Dragon Publishing and what you can expect with a hybrid, which I think is a wonderful option for a lot of people out there that are really serious about taking it to that next level. And we've talked some about the Williamsburg Book Festival. I think you gave us, people coming up and talking to their authors and actually buying directly from the authors is a great option. Dawn, what are you reading right now? What books are you reading right now?
I'm actually reading a number of books right now. I just finished Handmaiden's Tale. I am listening. I love audiobooks. I'm on the road all the time, so I always have an audiobook going. And I'm listening to the second Game of Thrones. No, I've never seen the movies, but because of the whole dragon thing, my intern has been bugging me about, you've got to see Game of Thrones. You've got to see. I don't have time to watch TV. So I'm listening to the books. So I'm on the second one of that. And I am sure I'm reading a business book. And of course, I have my magazines that I have to try to keep up with for publishing.
Sure.
So it just depends on which room I'm in.
Well, it's obvious that you have a very active mind and a lot of active interest. And you know, that's, you're just cultivating it. And it definitely, you're an inspiring personality here because I'm looking at 9 books, publishing company and a book festival. And in my wildest dreams, I would love to do a publishing company, but I would definitely have to leave the job that I have now and have my kids in college because myself, I wouldn't have enough time to do it. How do you do that? How do you manage all of this? I mean, now that you're out of the Air Force, that obviously gives you more time, but then you're adding more things to the free time, to your downtime. How do you manage all of that?
It probably wouldn't help for me to tell you, I'm also the president of our Quilt Guild, the Colonial Peacemakers, and we're having a big sale this weekend. So I'm really busy with that right now. And I'm very active in the church. I think staying busy makes me capable of getting more work done. You've heard the experience before where people have retired and they go, oh yeah, this is great. I'm just going to sit around. And then they die because they're not active. They're not doing anything. They get bored. I am never bored, ever. I'm looking forward to that one day for a very short time, probably.
Yeah.
But I don't know how I get it done. A good schedule, I guess. Supportive husband.
There you go. I need one of those. No, I have a supportive wife.
And my husband's retired Air Force as well. So that
you can't
helps.
Beat that. Well, Dawn, is there anything you would that we didn't cover that you'd like to leave with our audience here today? We've gone over the website, so folks, definitely go out to Dawn's main website, which is...
It's dawnbrothertonauthor.com. And also I have blue-dragon-publishing.com. So either way, depending on what you're looking for. And then the WilliamsburgBookFestival.com. Those are my three. And of course, I'm on Instagram and Facebook and all that
too. Now, we can get to all those from the DawnBrotherton.com website. That's how I got to Blue Dragon and the Williamsburg Book Festival. So we can just go to that one central website and get to everything else?
Sure. Good marketing. I have everything connected.
Free lesson there for you folks. Go buy her book, though. Go buy the book, okay? Definitely. The Road to Publishing, go buy that book. I know that's going to be the first one that I get from you. And then the girls, they're going to get the Lady Tiger series. I'll get it for them now. We'll save it for them for 2 years when they can do a lot better reading, because they're just doing the Dr. Seuss right now. So they're just, you know, Cat in a Hat.
You can't start reading them to them too early. That's the key. Read to them constantly.
There we go.
And there's discussion questions in the back, so you can talk about it afterwards.
And see, some of the books that we have out there, you know, I'm a big one with the Dr. Seuss and all that, but I like that now I'm going to be, I get paid next weekend, so expect a couple of sales. government employees, there we go. But I like the fact, okay, thank you for sharing that with us, because discussion questions are really important, because anytime we watch a educational program on TV or we read a book, I find that I'm always asking them questions about what happened, and it helps with their comprehension of it and their memory of it. But you've already had that built. You've already got that built into the book. So I'm just like, you're making it too easy on me to be your parent.
Anything I can do to help.
Hey, as a father of twins, I appreciate it, because we need a lot of help. Is there any final thought you would like to leave with us? Any words of wisdom that you like to push out to all of our audience members here tonight?
The only thing I can think of is, as a writer, it's a tool. It's a muscle. You have to exercise it. You have to practice. And your first baby might be ugly. Sorry. And you might have to keep trying.
No, that's perfect, because like you said, it is a muscle. It is something that you need to keep on doing. My first baby was not ugly. My second one was hideous. My second book was absolutely hideous. And I tell people, don't get it. I have a copy at home here. Take it for free. Get it out of my garage. But you know, the more
I rewrote my first one,
I think you kind of have to. Yeah.
I rewrote it after you learned. Yeah. You learned so much. And you catch little things. So you go back and rewrite it, even though my friends are like, stop wasting your time on that. But you don't want people to see your ugly baby. You want to put your best foot forward. So yes, I took the time to go back and rewrite it.
All right. Now I need to find more time in the day. I'm you know, petitioning for a 30-hour day. I'm just going to put that up and see where that goes. So that way I can rewrite a couple of mine, because definitely they need some work. But that's okay. They're works in progress. I'm working towards perfection, right? There we go. Well, Dawn, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us and your experience. And you know, the websites that we've already placed out there for everybody, go check her work out. If you have nothing going on in October, which you shouldn't have, go out to Williamsburg, go check out the book festival. If you have a book and you're really serious about it, go on to Blue Dragon Publishing. And you know what? The holidays are upon us. Memorial Day is coming up. Halloween is coming up. Thanksgiving, Christmas. I'm sure there's Hanukkah is coming at some point. Yeah, I'm trying to get all the Kwanzaa, great Kwanzaa gifts. Go grab a book by all means, and get it directly from the website. Don't go to Amazon. Amazon has enough money. Go directly to Dawn's website and grab the book. Better yet, go see her in person and shake her hand and have her write something in that book for you and personalize it. Dawn, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We really appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time.
All right. I hope you got a lot out of this interview with Don Brotherton here on Create Art Podcast. If you'd like to be on the show or if you have questions, feel free to email me, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. And I'd be happy to lend you my knowledge, whatever that may be. Also, I'd like to ask you one thing here. If you got any insights or any good information from it, feel free to pass it along to a friend that may be thinking about publishing their own book, or if they're thinking about publishing through a hybrid form or a traditional publisher. But I'd also like you to email me and let me know what would make this a 5-star podcast in your mind. If there's something that I missed, let me know. If you really enjoyed it, feel free to go ahead and rate me on your podcast app of choice. Now, if you can't get enough of my voice, well, then you can go to my other podcasts as well. I have Find a Podcast About, which can be found at findapodcastabout.xyz. And that's all about finding a podcast that is binge-worthy and outsmarting the algorithm. My other podcast is Clearly Obtuse, and you can find that at clearlyobtuse.com. And that podcast is all about what a podcast would sound like if it was an avant-garde podcast. It's not for the faint of heart, so take a listen, and you've been warned. It's actually a lot of fun. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next time. And oh, hey, don't forget, tame that inner critic, create more than you consume, and go make some art for somebody you love, yourself.